Robbie H. from Phoenix, Arizona. The 2016 Birmingham Fall Retreat, titled, Your Meeting Cannot Transmit What It Doesn't Have.
Hey guys, is this working? Yeah? Yeah. Do I really need it? Awesome. I feel like Madonna. I look like Madonna. Hey, I'm Robbie, recovered sex addict. Thanks for coming back. This afternoon was a little slow, a little hot, a little food coma. So I don't know where you are right now, but it doesn't matter because daddy's good. I'm amped up right now. I got a little bit left in me, got my third wind. So hang on, kids. We're going for a ride. Okay? Who knows? Maybe I might have enough time for questions. Who knows? We'll see. And if not, I'm always around, and feel free to get my information if you have other questions. I'm not, you know, if you just want to know something or talk. So, just thanks. It's good to be here. I just want to acknowledge, they say in the big book, or even our book, the most vital tool, for the addict is the other addict, one addict helping another addict. And I've gotten so much, not just out of being in groups with you all, but the conversation in the hallways and at the dining table, the before group, after group, that one-on-one conversation has really enhanced my recovery. So I'm glad you all came here to enhance my recovery. Thank you, It's all about me. So tonight I want to talk about something. And, I've read, maybe you've read it in your books, that, we cannot transmit what we don't have, right? If we're not sober, we really can't help someone else get sober. And my experience has been the same thing is true of our meetings. If our meetings aren't working well, we're not going to be working well. It's really hard to get sober from a meeting that's not sober. And so tonight I get to tell you a really cool story. It's the story of my home group, San Jose SAA. It's the story of how we evolved from a kind of a support group, in a very nurturing but a support group, a place where people came to share about their problems, a place where people came to get relief. And we offered a lot of relief. And how that group has evolved and grown into a place where there's experience, strength, hope. It's a 12-step fellowship that offers the solution to the still suffering sex addict. It's been a major transformation, a long transformation, and that transformation continues to happen every week. And so I want to share with you a little bit about that. And in speaking with some of you over this weekend, I've heard that a lot of you have gone through that transformation with your groups, and you continue to go through that transformation, continue to look for ways for your meetings to be in a better position, to have a clearer message, to adhere to the traditions, to maintain the boundaries that you set, things like that. So I want to share with you our experience and see what happens with you all. So the first thing, San Jose SAA, right? So we get this letter a few months back, this man, he's driving from somewhere out here to visit his son in the Bay Area. And he sends a letter to us, San Jose SAA in Mesa, Arizona, saying that he's going to the Bay Area and wants to go to meetings there. Well, Mesa, Arizona is really far from San Francisco, but we've got this gall-darn name, San Jose, right? And where did it come from? It used to be the name of the side street on the building where we're at. Of course, San Jose. And years ago when we were forming, we were several different meetings, different names, the Grace Group, the No Matter What Group, the Act Out Less Often group, the, co-sign one another's bullshit group, whatever we were. And we came together and formed one fellowship. And so we wanted to name ourselves. And we had all those rah-rah recovery names, Those kind of buster names. Yeah, we wanted those. Yet everyone already knew us at San Jose. And San Jose wasn't just our address or our location. It was kind of our image, our motto, our brand. It had gone from being this description about where we were to kind of, it was a noun and it was a verb, you'd go all San Jose on them. It kind of described how we carried the message. So the San Jose, it's not a location. It's a state of mind, man, So we own it. And it's fun, really kind of cool that we didn't give ourselves that name through our brains, but through our surrender and our traditions and our step work. It's our name and it means a lot. So if you ever hear San Jose, we're bringing it, man, okay? So go on a journey with me way back at the beginning of time, which was probably 17 years ago, all right? The history is a little spotty because we have very few people around San Jose who attended meetings back then. About 17 years ago, we started a couple meetings in the hospital, local hospital, because you could get free meeting space. Hospitals are great for that, right? And I'm thinking we started our meetings back maybe like 5 years before they even had the Green Book. Now, back when we were using some outside literature, we were using foundational literature, things like that, you were kind of scrappy. You pulled together what you had because there was the AA as the model. And yet we also had a lot of therapeutic models and some other things. So I guess the group was kind of scrappy and duct taped together a few meetings, and this is what we had. And this is what we had. So the meeting formats back then, I guess it was a process. You don't know what you don't know until you know it differently. And so we did the best we could with what we had, and we've evolved since then, and I'm grateful. I'm always grateful for the folks that started the meeting back then, back before it was San Jose, back before it was whatever. And they kept it going until God saw fit that we could evolve. So one of the meeting formats we had, maybe you guys have heard of these. We had these things called a check-in feedback group. Have those before? Heard of those? Awesome. And we had those up until about 2 years ago. They were on us like a birthmark. You couldn't even cover it up with like camouflage. It was there. A check-in feedback. If you don't know what it is, we're in our group, right? There are five of us because we go around the room and we check in. We check in hopefully about our recovery, but really it's about our triggers, our problems, our wife. Our triggers, our problem, our wife. And then we go back around the room and give feedback, which is really you oughta, you should, you could've. You oughta, you should, you could've. It's a check-in and feedback. Or depending on the meeting, it was more like a vomit and cosine, she is a B. She should trust you after a week of sobriety, right, man? I gotcha, the Green Book says, we're not a place to meet sexual partners and we're not group therapy. And that format feels pretty darn group therapy to me. We've learned now we don't. And even when we try to adjust that feedback, we share our related experience. We slide back into feedback. It was really comfortable. And the check-ins, we did a million things to try to structure that check-in to make it more program-focused, step work. Dang, if it always wasn't, it always went back that way. So we had that format for a while. It didn't work. And it took us 16 years to get rid of that. You get comfortable with something. You think it's working because people keep coming back. Just because they keep coming back doesn't mean it's good. We also had topic meetings. You all have topic meetings, right? Yeah, topic meetings. And some of the topics we would have, we've talked about before, triggers, my problem, my family, my boss, my money, that damn cat I keep talking about. It sounds like I don't like cats. Really, I don't. But, or my therapist said, or my pharmacist, a lot of stuff, which matters a lot, but when our primary purpose is to carry the SA message and talk about, experience, strength, and hope. Or maybe you've had this in one of your topic meetings. You do the readings, kumbaya, 12-step traditions, yeah, yeah, yeah. Who has a topic? Someone raises their hand and they spend about 10 minutes kind of vomiting all over the room. And then they say, if you can find a topic in that, it's like I'm Inspector Gadget. There's no finding a topic in that dude. And also, you raised your hand to introduce the topic. That was your job. I'm not co-signing you. You were it, This topic meetings were kind of a mixed bag. Once in a while, you'd get a good one. I'm working this step, and I'm struggling around the surrender. My sponsor has me calling two people every day. I don't know who to call, Even the trust, I'm trying to be honest, trying to be trustworthy, but I just don't know. I don't know how to be honest and never have been before. Those sound like recovery issues. But we just found that the random topic, it just kept us focusing on the problem, the issue, us, them, instead of the solution. And it seemed that the topic meetings generally didn't help people get sober. Now, they kept coming back. Topic meetings are always popular. They draw a lot of people, always a full room, but full isn't always better, They kept coming back. They just didn't get better. They didn't get sober. and they surely didn't help someone else get sober. You know, our job is to carry the message. We had a couple other formats back in the day. There was a period of time where, I'm going to keep using you four guys, okay? I think you look like some of the men in my home group back in the day. Well, so me and my bros over here, we'd sit around and we'd watch a video, a therapist video, a very well-known expert in the sex addiction industry, maybe. I don't know who it was because I wasn't there then. Could have been Dr. Seuss. I don't know. But anyway, we'd sit around and watch this video of an expert telling us what to do. And then we'd talk about what the video said. Kind of a bit of a support group, you know, therapeutic component. We'd all get together, try to omelet our trauma egg together, make it into a dish. It didn't work. And then there was this one meeting. Jeez Louise. It didn't really have a format, you know? There were some of the readings that we do, and then it was kind of like trust is servant choice. You know, like the wheel of fortune or wheel of torture. Tick, 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 tick. Tonight we are going to do the same damn thing we did the last 4 weeks because I'm here and this is the format I like, you know? That whoever got there first would get to choose the topic or the format, or which is good, except for this one meeting. This dude got there first for 3.5 years. 3.5 years of him doing this format, and it was the one that he felt safe with. Funny thing, when we eventually eradicated that and had a format, dude never came back. Didn't want us to talk about the steps, wanted a different conversation, wanted his own little, you know, Dr. Phil Oprah, you know, stool there on the carpet. You know, the issue with not having a consistent format, you never know what you're going to get. And sometimes life is that way, but in a meeting, that consistency kind of helps us. I need that Green Book study. And if there's a first step story, I need to know in advance so I can do what I need to do to take care of myself. You know, without that structure, without that format, there just wasn't a consistent means of carrying the message. So it was kind of a pig and a poke. Is that a good one? Yeah. Look at me. I'm bilingual. So that didn't do too well for the message. And for a while, they even had these things called a husband and wife meeting. Well, I don't have a husband, and I'm not getting a wife, so I wasn't invited. You know, it was an SA meeting where people would bring their spouse to an SA meeting. It was a close meeting for married people, not really tradition-oriented, and it was all about the relationship, which there are a lot of great things to do about recovery and relationship, but not the SA meeting. So I keep saying they didn't work. Well, let's hear why I think they didn't work and why my fellowship didn't think they worked. Mostly the message. In many of those meetings, the message is about relief, not recovery. Taking the edge off, taking it down. I think there was an overall lower expectation. You know, that acting out less often was okay, that not as bad as it was. You know, we were all so sick at the time that we had accepted just a little bit better was better. You know, we didn't know that there was this thing called, you know, recovery. You know, just not going to a porn shop every week. You know, yippee-ki-yay. We thought that was, you know, awesome. You know, that recovery, excuse me, that relief, not recovery message was carried through with those sentences, those statements like act out less often or do less harm. Do less harm because, you know, the married people, you know, marriages only get broken up by, you know, tranny hookers, not by constant porn watching. No marriage has been broken up by porn, right? No, that's not harmful at all. Excuse me. Or, you know, I've said it before that, you know, not acting out in your deepest, darkest inner circle. Or you hear people talking about their inner circles. There's only one. You're either in it or you're not. They're not these steps and layers, you know. Even though I acknowledge some of my inner circle stuff, it was some dirty stuff, and some of it was dirty stuff. Some of it caused more harm immediately. Others, it was like a slow trickle death. And somehow it convinced us, and we convinced ourselves with these formats, that the slow trickle death wasn't as bad. And I've often thought about that with my, you know, drug addiction, alcoholism. If I went out with that, it was going to kill me instantly. The sad thing with sex addiction, it's not that loving. It doesn't kill instantly. You know, it kills ounce by ounce, minute by minute, soul by soul. It's a slow, painful death, and it doesn't just take the addict. It takes a lot of people with it and leaves a lot of scars for a long time. You know, in those meetings, we had language. I love this one. So this person is talking about being 80% sober. I'm 80% sober. Now, it's kind of like the Weather Channel, right? So 80% sober, does that mean you're sober from 100% of your behaviors 80% of the time? Or 80% of the behaviors 100% of the time? I don't know this math. I don't have a calculator. I'm not a math magician. 80% sober. Because I read in the Green Book that sober meant that you're free from all your addictive sexual behaviors, not most, you know? And this is something, maybe regionally we have different languages. Many people talk about it being a slip. And some of you have heard that, and I know some of you use that language. Our experience has been a slip tend to minimize the situation that happened, you know, slip. At the grocery store, they have those like yellow signs when there's water there so you don't slip. A slip would be when I fall because of something else that was there out of my control. When I act out, it's a very different situation. When I act out, I put my marriage at risk, my family at risk, my health. When I act out, there's been some action that I've taken. And for me and for the folks I recover with at San Jose, we use that language, acting out. It comes from the Green Book because it clearly identifies the behavior, acting out. It's a little harsher sounding even. And slip seems a little general. I can slip. I slip. So that language is part of it. We also heard that the phrase progress, not perfection a lot. And that's not such a bad phrase all on its own, progress, not perfection. We're growing. It's not, you know, good or bad. We're on, you know, it's a journey. So it's not such a bad statement on its own if we're talking about spiritual progress. But it just doesn't cut the mustard when we're talking about sobriety. You know? My last relationship in my disease, whatever, it ended because I had some progress, not perfection. It just that one more time acting out. Just that one time. The last acting out wasn't the worst. It was just that one time too many, you know? When I acted out, I don't know what happened to the progress I had because I set it aside and went right back to where I was before. You know, I get the progress. I get I'm learning some things. But when I would act out, it's like in Monopoly. You know, I'd go back to go, and I did not get to collect my $200. Did not. In the rooms back then, we talked a lot about the recovery tools. And those tools are really helpful. So they're speed bumps. They slow me down. They allow me to, you know, stop and think before I act. They allow me to reach out to the fellowship. They allow me to try to cut God in on the deal. Hopefully they connect me to God and to the steps. Yet at that time, we weren't talking a lot about the steps, and we weren't talking a lot about God. We were talking a lot about these tools. And the tools do not make a program. Hopefully they lead me to it. You know, a lot of reliance on the blockers. I like blockers. I like filters on the phones, and I like those. I think they're phenomenal. But, I think I'm the only person in my fellowship that can't use the interweb here. You know, I'm computer. This is not my comfort zone with a computer. You know, you get those blockers, everyone seems like they can work around them, you know? It's a speed bump. They don't block. It's like a picket fence. You just have to jump fast enough. We had a lot of folks talking about the 3-second rule. I think we misunderstood its intent, you know? 3-second rule. Is that how long I get to stare and fantasize, you know? And when we count to three, now are we doing like 1, 2, 3, or are we doing that Mississippi count, you know? And are we saying Mississippi, or are we spelling it, you know? You know, 3-second, 3-second, because we've heard a lot today about just not acting out, just not, you know, not acting out, 3-second, 3-second, 3-second. You know, and I get the concept of a 3-second rule. I've got 3 seconds to get out of the situation. I've got 3 seconds. I notice that I'm objectifying. 1. Second one, I cut God in the deal, or I go for it. 3, get out. You know, 3 seconds. So I think it's more of a 3-point rule, you know, 3-question rule. 3 seconds, you know, I don't know about telling time. We had some folks that use the rubber band technology. Yeah, rubber band, you've seen that on the wrist? Those of us who have a few more candles on the cake, do you all remember Schick, the Stop Smoking Center? I think stop smoking because of the pain. Every time I'm triggered, snap. Every time I see someone, oh, hello, snap, you know, because the pain, if we sex addicts will get enough pain, we'll be snapped into, you know, spiritual sobriety. Snap. Yeah. We had a lot of red wrists in that place. A lot of red wrists, you know. We had some folks talking about their wives being their accountability partner. Isn't that a job you want to sign up for? Can I handle your filter? And don't do check-in calls with them. She's watching me. She's my sponsor. Or I'm working the steps with my therapist. Despite the fact that all 12-step programs, we're working with a sponsor. But despite the fact that everyone else in the room is having this awakening and there's this cycle of getting sober, helping everyone else. No, I have to pay for it. It's different. I'm different then. I can't access that. And then when I come to the room, I'm sharing different stuff. Recruiting? It got icky. It got murky. As a result of that, we didn't have any experience, strength, and hope that comes from the 12 steps. We had a lot of advice. We had a lot of referrals. We had a lot of information on these other tools, these other bits and pieces. But we didn't have the experience, strength, and hope that comes from God through the steps. But we were together, and I'm grateful for that, There's always hope. We were together, and we stayed that way, kind of plunking along, two meetings, three meetings. Groups would have four, five, people. Stayed that way for about 12 years. And the problem was that we were all there to share about my solution, not the solution. My interpretation, my assessment, what I'm doing that's different than yours. And it would show up in the shares, Anyone want to share? Hand goes up. Oh, wait, we don't raise hands there. We just speak out. The shares are always my share. It's my share. It's my time. I can share what I want. Even though we have traditions, even though we have boundaries, anyone want to share? Remember, we don't crosstalk. Well, I don't mean to crosstalk, but you over there, it's my share. I can, I really want you to know about this therapist I'm seeing. His number is, and the phone number comes out. I've had this really good experience reading this Star Trek novel. You all should read it. It's by Gene Roddenberry, is that right? And it's on page 77. Let me read it to you. This kind of stuff, my experience in my life, not my experience in working the program. A lot of promotion of other solutions. Dr. So-and-so's book, The Brain Chemistry. Something about lizard brains? You guys know about that? I don't know. Healthy holding, healthy touch. What the heck? A lot of things. I guess we were all getting a lot of good magazines at the time and cutting out articles. Rather than sharing our experience, strength, and hope on working the 12 steps, we were all going out and recruiting different ideas and thinking this was a clearinghouse for what might work, even though we had a solution right before us. A lot of us thought it was like the Oprah's Book Club of the Month Club, What are you reading? Come tell us about it. That was my experience at San Jose, and it was my experience in Birmingham this week. Just the book thing. Not the brain therapy, not the lizard, but the book thing. It happens. And this, I think, unfortunately, this situation, this story I'm telling, isn't unique to my home group. In the conversations I've had with many of you throughout the weekend, there's always an opportunity for us to get better at having a sober meeting, get better at carrying the message, get better at our focus. And this isn't just a Birmingham thing. It's not a San Jose thing. I've been to meetings in California. We've been in Charlotte. Wherever we travel, there's some phenomenal meetings out there, but there's always this opportunity, always. I don't know, is it a sex addict or what? There's always an opportunity for us to return to the message, and the message is our message. We only have one message. We also ran into issues with the spiritual part of the program. Either some of the folks wanted to minimize that it was a God program, totally minimize it, or we'd swing to the other side, and it was quoting what my preacher said at the sermon program. You can't say that. Well, this is what he said. You can't say that back and forth. We didn't know this. We were on a pendulum. We didn't know that there was this, this thing in the middle where we're seeking God through the steps. And service. That service mentality. We had specific individuals that were pillars of the service. They held up the roof so high that no one else could touch the roof. And their arms were getting tired, but no one else could touch the roof. We didn't have the service cycle where people were being kind of trained up and geared up and learning how to be of service. It was either the people that are doing all or people that were doing none. And neither one of them knew how to transfer and trade. We didn't know how to create service committees to get people somewhat serving, and you know, using the sponsorship and using committees, we just, you know, there were the doers and the not doers. You know, we had the bleeding deacons and others that were trapped in their position, and even the fellowship was trapped in its history. It was that way. It worked enough. You know, it worked enough. We still had the rooms. People were still coming. It wasn't as bad. We had relief. And all that resulted in none of the hope that comes from working the 12 steps. None of the hope that comes from watching other people grow. You know that pride you get when your sponsee gets their first sponsee? You know, it's like you want to hand out cigars. Because you know, the family tree is growing another limb or whatever, but because you know what they're going to get from the opportunity of sharing someone else the solution, that pride. And we didn't get to see that handing off, you know? So after about 5 or 6 years at the hospital, we moved. All right. After about 5, 6 years at the hospital, we got kicked out, you know, but we'll call it move. Why not? You know, we can rewrite our history. We got kicked out. So we spent time in someone's garage, in their patio, in the living room, at a park, you know, trying back then. It was hard for us to find space. One of the reasons it was hard for us to find space is we had a lot of shame about who we were. We didn't have a lot of pride. We couldn't go to people and say, this is who we are, because we were still acting out less often. We were still just a little bit better or a little less worse. I don't know. So we struggled. Eventually we found some space in a medical office. It's kind of like the space in Birmingham. So there was a Reiki healer. There was a therapist, a chronic pain person, about five barbers doing like fades and cuts and, you know, in Birmingham. And we got one space, and right next to us was the woman that did the high colonics. So every time you're in the meeting, circling up, holding hands, you'd hear the water flush through the building, you know? It was like, all right, this is where we are, uptown. And a little side note about that, we were there for a little bit, and some of the other customers got spooked, so the terms of our lease got adjusted. We were only allowed to have meetings there at night, we weren't allowed to be there during the day, and we weren't allowed to use the bathroom in the building anymore. So we had to use the bathroom across the street at McDonald's for about 6 years. And just saying that now, I'm so sad for us. That's where we were. That's what we accepted. That's kind of, you know, if you were like me, when you acted out, you deserved less, and we accepted less. And that's where we were for quite a while. But we changed, and we had space, right? You know what happens when you move? You change your address, and that's about it. If nothing changes, nothing changes. So we had new space, though, you know? Brown walls. We had those cheap old plastic chairs that you get at the Rite Aid, Thrifty. I don't know what they are here, Osco. They're like $4.97 on sale for $2.97. And us muscular men like me, you have to stack two or three together so they don't fall over. They bend back. And they would just pinch, you know, your love handle in the back. They were just a treat. But we had a space. We weren't in the park, you know? So we had 3 or 4 meetings, and we stayed small that way, just kind of limping along, doing the best we could for about 10 years. You know, people came and they went. People came, got enough relief. They got enough of their life back, enough of the trust in the relationship, and went back. You know, there was no step work. There was no sticking around. People got relief. They got just what was offered. You know, we didn't have any expectations of service work, of step work, of doing your first step in a meeting. We didn't have a lot of expectations about who would sponsor, that sort of stuff. We didn't have any expectations, and they couldn't expect a miracle. Wow, it sounds really depressing, doesn't it? Oh my God. Actually, it kind of sounds like a first step story. You know, when you read your first step story? So I'm done with what it was like, okay? So now let's get to what happened. So what happened was... crack myself up. So about 5 years ago, something happened, and there was a shift in the room. There was some kind of shift in the room, and it had to do with the traditions. You know, God put a few people together, just the right click. There was, you know, someone coming over from the mothership, you know, from the other program, who, you know, who kind of said, oh, hell no, you know? A couple of people that said, oh, you know, and a few people came from a different, you know, part of town. And so we got this focus on the fifth tradition. And not in everywhere, not swipe, not clean the whole room. Just a few people started to share loudly, proudly, clearly, steps solution. You know, my inner circle, this is what I'm sober from. My middle circle, they got really clear, really honest. All I know is if I do the steps, things are going to get better. All I know is if I waste time in meetings hearing a bunch of other crap, I'm not going to get better. I deserve to get better. You know, they started sharing really clear. And it kind of started piecing together. You know, a couple people, it's like tiles on the floor, you know? This tile was getting a little bit better, clearer. So was this one. And so we started getting some clarity in the room. And the clarity was around the SAA purpose. That we were there to share the SAA message. Not some other message, not my message, our message. We really got into some great conversations. Your message is lovely, but we're here to talk about our message. This is our meeting. This is our share. This is our minute. We can't waste any of it on something else. Something else may be helping you, and that's great. You need to find a place that they sit and discuss lizard therapy. This is not the place, you know? So some changes started happening. Formats started getting changed. Meeting format. I like format, you know? Meetings aren't everything in the program. They're just the heart of the fellowship. They're the heart. They're where we go to learn about the program. We find our sponsors. We find other people that we feel safe with. We get challenged. We found programs to copy, you know, case, copy and steal everything. You know, we get a lot from our meetings since we started with the format. First, we started with Green Book studies because we didn't know how to work the SA program. We were just naive, ignorant, oblivious. So we started studying the Green Book regularly. It's a text. It tells us what to do. It's a frickin' cookbook, you know? Just read the darn recipe. And as a result of doing the Green Book studies, people start doing step presentations. You know, first step, fifth step. People start sharing in meetings what was happening. And we got to know each other a lot better. We eliminated all outside literature. Today, it's in our bylaws. SAA literature is our first choice. If SAA does not have a sufficient piece of literature, then we go to the foundational literature in AA, the big book or the 12 and 12. That's our foundational literature. We got rid of all outside literature. Answers in the Heart is outside literature. SAA has a meditation booklet. It has two. It's building another one. Back in the day, we used other books in the fellowship, a lot of books, you know? Hope and Recovery, we used that for a long time because it's what we had. But we have our own literature now, and it works. We really switched to formats that, what's it say? Formats that focus on learning how to integrate the steps into our lives, We really looked for that. Not the stories of how bad it was, but how to get better. And the message, we were really challenging one another with what message you were sharing. You know, I may be the only Green Book someone else is ever going to see. When someone comes into a room of SAA, they're not coming into the San Jose room. They're not going to the Grace Group. They're going to an SAA meeting. They don't know that Grace Group is fully autonomous. It's an SAA meeting. And so the message that we present at the meeting, that's SAA's message. And we talked a lot about take your message to your sponsor, man. Bring the message to the meeting, the message of hope through the steps. And we got really clear with people during the meeting and after the meeting. Are you open to some feedback? Okay, good. What you shared today was mess. And God bless you for having that mess. We want to support you with that mess. In the future, when you share that, could you focus on the solution? It's okay to bring your mess, tag it with a solution, and then we got something to deal with. But this isn't a place just for the mess. If the share wasn't about the program, if the share wasn't about the steps, we really didn't need it. Because we were all so crazy. We are all so sick and tired of being sick and tired. We just needed the one message. We got to this point, we start calling each other out. Your opinion doesn't matter here, just your experience, strength, and hope. Nowhere in the book, the big book, does it ask, what's your opinion, you know? We all had our opinion and something else, you know, those two things we all have. And so we started calling one another, and it's tough. to get honest, you know? A hug and a kick in the ass are both good ways to show love and the fellowship. And we had been using the hug a little bit too much and the kick a little too little, you know? It was kind of cool because of this experience, because of sharing the program, focusing on the formats, because of challenging one another, a really cool thing started happening. People started getting sober. You know, people, and they were holding on to their sobriety because they were working the steps. We had this change in budget, unfortunately. We started, our chip budget changed because plastic white chips are a lot cheaper than the heavy metal chips, you know? So if we started running out of heavy metal chips, we had to change our chip budget to accommodate for that. You know, when someone would get a chip, you know, say, well, have you put in enough money this month for that? Because that cost us $5. Pony up, you know? And one of the effects, and it was scary doing this stuff. Really scary, uncomfortable. You know, after the meeting, after you have one of those conversations, you know, when you set a boundary is one thing. Then when you maintain it, oh, that's a whole different ball game. You know, I have to maintain a boundary, and then I get in the car, and I kind of, you know, I don't mind F myself. You know, I'm all over myself, self-doubting. What was I doing that should have maintained it? It was a boundary. Maintaining a boundary was so hard for this addict and for our room, and so we had to do a lot of supporting afterwards. You know, when people would be lovingly challenged in the meeting that, I'm sorry, you know, I'm sorry, that's outside literature. We don't share that here. I'm sorry, you're endorsing, you know, an outside issue. You know, we don't quote professionals in this room here because of the traditions. And it was tough. You know, there's a while there where, you know, there was a motion at a business meeting that only the trusted servant could do that. And went round and round. And the group conscience was, no, it's not the trusted servant's meeting. It's our meeting. And we all need practice in learning to make sure that the meeting is safe and appropriate. We all need that. We all have that opportunity and that obligation. And also, by putting that weight on the trusted servant, if the trusted servant doesn't have that skill yet, you know, if they're not there in their program yet, then the meeting just deals with it? No. The meeting must be safe for all of us. You know, that first tradition, our common welfare must come first. It says should, but I'm going to write must. And what happened, we went from my share, my problem, your share, your problem, we wound up having a united message. You know, there's one message, it's one meeting, it's one fellowship, one God, one set of steps, a united message. And most were united in it, not all. We got to deal with a few things that I think you may have encountered over here. Feelings checks. Y'all have feelings checks? We had feelings checks. Being in the meeting, I'm going to tie my shoe as we talk. Feelings checks. So you check in how you're feeling. Physically, emotionally, spiritually, and sexually. Physically, emotionally, spiritually, sexually. And I'd go to a lot of Sunday night meetings, Sunday after the barbecue, right? So some of the things I'd hear. Physically, how you feeling? What kind of fool, we had a barbecue. Okay. Emotionally, I got to go to work tomorrow. Kind of crappy. Physically, emotionally, spiritually. Went to church this morning. Sexually, satisfied. What the hell? What the heck? And that's what we did. You know, somehow we learned that we're supposed to get honest with each other, check in. We were asking the wrong questions. I think we had the right idea. We were asking the wrong questions. And you may have different experiences in your fellowship now. We still do check-ins at many meetings there. The check-in format is different. And who knows how God's going to show us later on what to do with them. Right now, we check in at many of our meetings with our inner circle, our sobriety date, our phone calls, our step work with our sponsor, and our spiritual condition. Right now, we think that helps us identify. It also helps the newcomers understand what inner circles are. You know, we always get these questions. What the heck is edging? You know, a lot of education happens when we're talking about inner circle behaviors. We talk about the problem, and then we get to talking about the solution, what we're doing about it, right in our check-in. And I'm kind of excited to see what happens with that in the future. You know, it's progress, not perfection. We're getting there. That's helped a lot compared to the barbecue satisfied, you know, story, you know? And through part of this process with it being in unity, we united around one tool that really helped us. And you have access to this tool. It's called the traditions. You know, there are 12 tools in that toolbox, and they really helped us look at meetings and understand what to do. That way, it didn't have to be the debate between you and me, my opinion, your opinion. The answer was already there. God had already provided, you know, the resolution to our group through the traditions. We looked at, like, tradition four sometimes. You know, each group should be autonomous, because at this time, we had 5, 6, 7 different meetings now, and they're all autonomous. And so they all had their own group meetings, individual group conscience, but we were still kind of united. So each group is autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or SA as a whole. Yeah, lightning bolt. Everything that happens at your meeting affects my meeting. Because you're SAA, I'm SAA. I still believe in the autonomy of the group. But when your group is talking about, you know, chicken broth as the cure, and this group is talking about snake oil, and we're talking about the steps, it affects. It's the message. When the newcomer comes to an SAA meeting, we decided that they should find an SAA meeting, not something else. You know, we focused a lot, as I've said in other shares this weekend, on the fifth tradition. Each group has but one primary purpose, not two, not three. One primary purpose: to carry its message to the sex addict who still suffers. And that message is that freedom from addictive sexual behavior is possible through working the 12 steps. So we kept focusing on, we only have one message, that message, the steps. If the meeting isn't about the steps, it's something else. And we failed to meet that, kind of that bar. And it's not a very high bar. The bar says you talk about one thing. Just one expectation. You talk about the program, the SA program. You know, we looked at the seventh tradition. It wasn't about the money. It was about service and service commitments. Are we really building up a fellowship that supports itself through the work? Are we really helping people not just get sober, but get recovered through service work, through the committees, through the group conscience, through ownership? Are we rotating out treasurer, trusted servant, creating that regular rotation? Trusted servants for each meeting rotate out every month. You have a month. When you're done, someone else volunteers. If you don't show up, that's your obligation, your commitment. If you don't show up, your job is to get someone else to cover that for you. It's a commitment. And it's really cool as a sex addict who you couldn't count on for shit before to be able to count on me for a whole month. For that newcomer, that guy that's been there, that gal that's been there 3 or 4 weeks, 4 months, to have the key or to be trusted, that we trust you. We'll help you because we really don't trust you. But we trust you, you know? It's when you see that person, you know, lead their meeting for the first time for the whole month. One time isn't enough. One time they're usually crapping themselves. You know, by the second time they get some rhythm. By the third time they see that they have a role in the fellowship. And when they're done, then they get to hand it off to the next person and walk them through that process and kind of be their mentor. And it kind of mirrors almost that like sponsorship thing. Don't worry, I got you. I'll help you, you know? If you can read, you can succeed. And so this rotating out the trusted servant thing was really awesome. Not this popcorn, whoever shows up first, you know, tap, 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 I'm there stuff, you know? We worked a lot on the SAA has no opinions on outside issues. We struggled with this because people would, you know, voice a positive opinion. So I'd voice a negative opinion. No, it says no opinions, Robbie. Neither opinion is right. We don't get involved in all the other stuff. And some of the things I'm going to point out may fall under this tradition. They can be captured in others. Things like books, as I mentioned. No outside books. We don't quote outside literature here. Authors. We don't mention the author of this literature. Therapists. We don't care who's a good therapist. You may, and talk to someone outside about that. You know, that's your private conversation, not our SA message. Treatment centers. You know, I sponsor a few guys that are in town in Scottsdale at an intensive outpatient. That's it. Don't tell us the brand name. You're not doing a commercial. There's no kickbacks. You don't get an extra week by mentioning so-and-so's name, you know? Your church's men's group. That's great that you found a spiritual place that's enhancing your spiritual recovery. This is not the place. Or other 12-step programs that deal with sex addiction. This is not the place. We looked at our public relations policies, attraction versus promotion, and we came to the awareness that the best attraction we can have is a sober meeting. As long as our meeting is sober and healthy, is a vibrant scene. It attracts people. It attracts people. The converse is, if we focus on promotion, getting people in the door, what the heck are they going to find? You know? So as a result, at San Jose, through a lot of difficult, this has not been easy, and we're not done. But we're so much better than we were. And there's a solution there. As a result, we've built this culture of sobriety rooted in the steps and the traditions, a meeting you can bank on, you know? Before we'd get a newcomer, they'd ask, well, what meeting should I go to? You'd look up on the wall, and you'd, like, steer them to the two, you know, that to go to, and then you'd, like, pray that they wouldn't show up at the other ones, you know? Or if they were, you'd want, like, all right, can you go there? He's going to be there on Tuesday. Will you go there, too, just to make sure that he gets some solution or she gets some solution? Or if a woman newcomer came to a meeting, oh, you can't go to that meeting because those guys are going to be talking about their wieners the whole time, you know? You know, we'd like her to hear about sobriety, not the wiener. You know, this culture of sobriety, there's some things we... in our sharing, and that things like, it's okay to be gentle with me, but don't be gentle with me about my program. And God, please don't co-sign my bullshit. If I'm getting janky, if I'm coloring outside the lines, if I'm BSing you, if I'm doing half measures, call me on it. You know, good sponsorship, good friends in the program, we hug each other and we hold the mirror up. The mirror is a really effective tool. In our meetings, we set and maintained boundaries. That was hard to set, maintain boundaries. Oh my God. So story time. So I'm at a Sunday morning meeting. It's a meditation meeting. It's an 11-step meeting. We read big book and it chairs, plants, pray, that sort of stuff. And this one guy is out of line. He's talking about the zombie Jesus because it's Easter Sunday. Well, son, no, you can't say that. That's not okay, interrupting him. And then someone else starts reading out of, you know, 2 Corinthians. No, we can't do that. And challenging, we had those boundaries. And we had to figure out when a boundary is crossed, when is it time to talk to someone after the meeting, say, hey, in the future? And when is it time to, right in the middle of the meeting, say, I'm sorry, you can't? It seemed that either one was 51% of the time wrong. You know what I mean? When do you do it? When do you don't? It's tough. It's tough to wait, and then you see the people, zombie Jesus. You can't let that slide, you know? But you know, the reading out of the spirit, the other book, you can't. When do you do it? We had to get a lot of practice. You know, kind of like with the crosstalk. You guys probably have that in your groups. No crosstalk. And then someone says, but I'm going to crosstalk anyway. No. No, and no. We dealt with things about the crosstalk. Cell phones. We have, it's in our announcements. I'm sorry, we don't use cell phones in the room. If you need to do so, please step outside or wait until after the meetings. You know, so last week, a week before last, I'm at a meeting and someone's on his phone. Those of you on tape, I'm swiping like I'm on a smartphone. He's on his phone. Yeah, we all know what this is, right? And during my share, I said, I'm sorry, we don't use cell phones in here. You gots to go, you know? And he was really put off that I called him out in front of the group. Well, I'm sorry, Tiger. Didn't you hear this instruction at the beginning of the meeting? We said no cell phones. Not no unless you want to. We have three doors to our building. You can step out time. It's okay to step out. We step out for the potty all the time. We step out for phones. There's a way to do it. You stand up and use your feet, you know? But we said no phones. A boundary, no is no. Focus on the solution, not the problem. When someone is beginning to talk about all they're acting out, and I heard someone else in the group here, maybe it was today, in a meeting yelling out, where's the solution? You know, a little bit of a nudge. The outside literature. I'm sorry, that's against the traditions. We don't quote outside literature. That calling on people. We identified it before as our boundary, as our value, as tradition-based, right? Yet we still had to get more practice on what to do with it when it happened. And we're still getting practice on that. When to say it, when not to. If someone's new, you don't want to, you know, swarm on them, pounce on them. Someone's been around for a while. They've been in enough meetings. They hear the announcement. They're aware of it. You know, when they're sneaking their phone, come on, you know. So it's always a question when to, when not to. we've gotten really rigorous about our truth with one another, our honesty, you know, about what it takes to get sober, what it takes for our fellowship to get sober, what these traditions, this coming together, this unity. And as a result, there's been a lot of ruffled feathers. Change is hard for sex addicts. Change is hard for people, you know, and this was change, going from something that was familiar and was good enough, you know, familiar and good enough. Good enough wasn't good enough. So ruffled feathers about that group autonomy. We eventually, we've been growing, and I'll talk about the growth in a bit, and we became one group. And we'd been separate meetings, different registration, different money, different chips. But we had been united. These meetings all had these same values, and we were all at San Jose. And so we became one fellowship. That's one autonomy. Or before, little fiefdoms or whatever. That was a lot of, you know, we got to invite some people. If you want that meeting to be on its own, here's the door. If you want that meeting to be in this space, we're going to join together. You have the option of leaving. It's okay. We went through a lot of struggle when we decided to become a business entity to register as a nonprofit. You know, it was necessary for us because of our lease. We'd always had three individuals on the lease who then, you know, the groups paid the rent to. I was one of the people on the lease. I'm a little bit of a control freak. You know what I mean? And tradition-wise, you don't want me being the one deciding whether or not a new meeting can come in. You know, who, when, what, how? I should never have that kind of control. The group should be in charge of itself. So we determined that the group would need to assume the lease. The group was a bunch of yahoos that had been there 12 years, who at one point hadn't been able to use the bathroom. So they had to form, we had to form a business entity, a nonprofit, so that we could actually, you know, get a bank account finally and, you know, be on the lease. That took some work. Changing the meeting formats. You know, the formats that were really popular just weren't working, but they were really popular. That was tough. You know, that check-in meeting that I talked about, you know, we had three of those, you know. Some of them you do in the whole group. Others you break out into little groups. And, oh, my gosh. We're still, like, shampooing the blood out of the carpet from that one, you know. And feedback in meetings. Maybe many of you do this. Someone gives their first step presentation, and you get feedback. Do you all do that sometimes? No? Yes, okay. Someone shares their story, and then we all give them feedback. It points onto them. And this, each group kind of interprets the traditions as they can, as best as they can. And our group got to the point where we saw that as crosstalk. We also saw that violating the first tradition. You know, our common welfare should come first, because our focus was on one person only. And so we eventually determined that violated the traditions. That was a scary one for us. And instead of giving feedback to the individual, there are really strict suggestions that we share related experience. And it was really cool. I went to a first step a few weeks ago. And this gentleman, when he shared his first step story, it was like throwing a big boulder in the pond. And that was a ripple. And then when other people shared their related experience that was similar to that or what came up for them, that was their ripple and their ripple. So by the end of the night, I didn't have one person's first step story and all of us validating them for doing the step work. I got to hear like 18 different stories of experience, strength, and hope, which is what the meetings are about. We all share, not one. That one, that took a lot of soul searching for us to come to. And with those ruffled feathers, we lost a few people. Some people liked it the way it was, didn't see the need to change, or even our process in getting to that change. We did not do it smoothly. We did not do it efficiently. There were, you know, emotions involved at times. And some people chose to take the recovery elsewhere. And thank God there we can do that. You know, two people can get together and start a meeting anywhere. And no judgment, no shame. Rock on. If this isn't for you, you know, where we're united isn't working for you, okay, cool. Let us talk about it. Maybe we can find some other people like you, and we can, you know, we can support you in going that way. We can advertise for you. We can promote you, that sort of stuff. Some people left. So what's San Jose like now? And I've mentioned this weekend, I'm really proud of my fellowship. We did a lot of hard work, you know, a lot of hard work. And we grew from that really small place and not a lot of hope, just a lot of relief. And, you know, that small place with a bathroom. And we've moved several times. We got to build out our own space. You should have seen Daddy swinging a hammer. They even videotaped it. Not very good, you know? I would not advise a bunch of sex addicts to rehab their own commercial space. There are people that do that. It's in the traditions. We're allowed to hire people, right? So what's our meeting space like now? What is San Jose SA like now? It's pretty freaking awesome, man. So we grew from 5 weekly meetings 5 years ago to 15 weekly meetings now. And in that time period, the population hasn't really changed that much in our area because it was after the housing bubble, you know? We grew from 5 weekly meetings to 15 weekly meetings. And we have 3 additional monthly meetings on top of that. The attendance that used to be 6 or 7 people at a meeting, it's now 15, 20 for the smaller meetings in the morning and 40 or 50 regularly for the night meetings. You know, it's packed. It's awesome. We've moved 3 times to accommodate the space. You know, we're in a really lovely space. This really great guy decorated. Oh my God, I did such a good job. You know, it's a beautiful, welcoming space. It's upstairs, has a big, large balcony for private meeting space with sponsees. It's open several times throughout the week to meet with your sponsor and to do step work and to meditate. You know, we have 5 weekly Green Book meetings where we just study the Green Book. We have a big book in a 12 and 12 meeting because that foundational literature is important to our fellowship. We have a newcomers meeting Monday night. I love this meeting. Monday night used to be one of the check-in feedback meetings. 12 people, 8 people. And it was, and Monday night we found out that's when a lot of newcomers show up. You get busted over the weekend. You get caught. You get to work, look for meetings online. You drag your ass in. Yeah. And they were going to Monday night to hear about people's barbecues and, you know, yeah. So now it's a newcomers meeting where we read the first 31 pages of the Green Book. You know, step at the beginning to the third step. We check in like we did before so we can model for them so they get almost like a bunch of mini first steps when we all check in with our inner circle behavior and our sobriety date. They hear that sobriety is possible. And we were afraid at first it would just be a bunch of newcomers, a bunch of white chippers, you know, no one with sobriety. It's really cool seeing the people with long-term sobriety that seek that out as an opportunity to give back. We have 4 literature-based discussion groups. We have some topic meetings. The topics must come out of SA literature. You find the literature in advance. It's the trusted servant for a whole month. And all month long, their job is to find a different topic out of the literature. They read it, and then we discuss that. Those are our topic meetings. Because whatever's going on with us, the triggers, the wife, the money, the cat, it's in the book somehow. We can find a topic out of that in there. We have a long-term sobriety speaker meeting. Once a month, we have our birthday potluck meeting where we have a speaker who has, for us, it's a year or more of sobriety. They speak. We have plenty of opportunities for first step stories, fifth step stories throughout the month. But once a month, we get together and the people that get chips, you know, heavy metal chips, they speak. And then someone speaks for a whole, you know, whole hour and they speak on one of the spiritual principles of the program. And it's an open meeting. We get a lot of couples, a lot of healing, a lot of, you know, introduction. And we got that one wrong at first. At first, we did that one in conjunction with COSA. They had half the meeting. We had the half the meeting. We thought it was a great thing until we looked at the traditions and, you know, we can't have the same meeting with them. They're a different fellowship. They have their traditions. We have ours. And so we eventually had to split that off. But it's a really cool meeting now. We have 4 meditation meetings each week. 3 of them are 11-step meditation meetings. They're all open. I think we have like 7 open meetings a week. They're all open. And then we have this one really cool 10-step meditation meeting. It's kind of a weird one. It's cool. It's one Saturday a month, the last Saturday of the month. We read the instructions from the Big Book and from the Green Book on how to do a 10th step. And then it's at night and it's candlelight. So all the lights go out and you meditate on your 10th step and what we just read and prayed about for 15 minutes. And then in front of your family, in front of your people, you check in with your 10th step, that structured basis. And have you ever been to one of those candlelight meetings? When you can't see someone's face, you share really honestly. not like I am right now, selling it to you, right? You know? You get really vulnerable because you don't get the feedback from other people's faces. All you have is your truth. I love that meeting. We have a monthly panel workshop. Three or four people from the fellowship are selected to speak on a topic every single month. The circles, a lot of the Kool-Aid stuff, you know, the circles, phone calls, sponsorship, relapse prevention every single month. And they have a really fun one with that on how they're going to cater it, you know, what food. You know, milk and cookies. We had ice cream floats one time, nacho bar. One time they did hot dogs. Don't do that. Don't do that. And all of our meetings at San Jose are mixed. It's in our bylaws. They're all mixed because they are. Because I can't afford to separate out half of the fellowship for my recovery. Now, we understand other groups don't have single gender. And what we found is that we need to be safe. We need to have experience. That way, when someone from the other gender comes to our meeting, we know how to behave and interact. As long as we're focusing on the solution, talking about the steps and the traditions, not our junk, you know, it seems to be a safer place. We know it's not a safer place for everyone, but it really beats the one time I was at a men's only meeting and a woman came to our first meeting in tears, banging on the door, and they wouldn't let her in. It was a single gender meeting. They were following their boundaries. We don't, San Jose doesn't believe in that. We believe in the third tradition that everyone who wants help should get to come to the meeting no matter what. We also believe, and we established this boundary because of the 12th tradition. You know, principles before personalities. Your gender is an outside issue. It's like your job, like your wealth, like your religion. It's an outside issue because recovery is genderless. The steps are genderless if we talk about the solution. And we find by having a mixed meeting that we're less different than we thought before. It's not without issues. It's just the way we've chosen to address it. And we're really damn happy with it. So you've heard me speak three times this weekend, right? And I've said the same damn thing each time, haven't I? Because the solution doesn't change. It doesn't change. You know, and at San Jose, our message is simple and it's pure and it's consistent. Now when a newcomer comes to the room and we have this giant wall that has all these glass bulletin boards, dry erase boards, covers the whole wall, beautiful art installation, and they want to know which meetings they should go to, we get to say any of the ones up there. We don't, our outreach, we have an outreach chair, right? We're flush with money. We're rich. We have flush with money. We don't spend money on outreach. Instead, we spend that money on inreach, on enhancing the message that we have in the rooms. We don't have to put flyers up to get people to come in. What we have to do is make sure that when they get there, that we give them the message of hope. And we use that money to enhance our message inside, and they come to us. We don't have to go to therapists to refer to us. They know of us. They know of our message because our message is simple, pure, and consistent. It's the SAA message. You know, that whole attraction versus promotion thing? There's nothing more attractive than a sober meeting. You know, when I think of the gender meetings, there's nothing safer than a sober meeting. You know, we have that pamphlet, Safe and Sexually Sober Meetings for Women. Cross out the women, because we all experience that in meetings. They're not safe if they're not sober. Doesn't matter your gender. So as long as we have the meeting safe and focused on the traditions, they're safe for everyone. You know, at one point, wow, I just got emotional. At one point, San Jose couldn't transmit what it didn't have. We had nothing to offer. Nothing to offer ourselves and nothing to offer anyone else. We weren't a place to get sober. We were a place to stay sick. And today, San Jose has a lot to offer. We have a lot to transmit. We have a commitment, an undying commitment to carrying the SAA message. We have formats that support SAA recovery. We have meetings that honor the traditions, meetings that set boundaries, and meetings that empower everyone at the meeting to uphold those boundaries so the meeting can be safe for everyone. We have a message that has experience, strength, and hope. We have individuals that are getting sober and sober and sober. The meetings are growing, and size of a meeting is not, it's not a goal. It's not. 50 people at a meeting, it gets smelly. You know, that's not the goal. But somehow it's an indication that there's something pretty attractive to that meeting. You know, what we offer today is a message of experience, strength, and hope. And I hope that's what people find at your meetings too. I'll pass.